You'll notice as you look around, there probably Bob Sheffield with us. Bob is a native of Canada and was formerly a professional hockey player. And that probably goes good with Canada. It wouldn't go too well in some other parts of the country, but I think that matched. He's living here with his wife, Nancy, and they have a young son, 12, named Tim, a girl that's 10 years old named Pam, and another boy, 7, Steve. They are living here now in Colorado Springs. He's been on staff with the Navigators about 12 years, and we're happy to have him with us tonight, and he's going to share a few things, and in the process of doing that, a little bit more about his life. So, Bob, please.
Bill is really happy now that we got somebody in the White House who doesn't have an accent. We really give him a hard time. Well, we're really glad you're here. And throughout the course of the evening, we do hope that your questions will be answered. Some of you are probably more familiar with the Navigators than others, and maybe some of you don't know anything about us. And before the evening is over, we would hope to fill you in on a few of those details. Obviously, we can't tell you everything, but we'll give you enough so that you'll leave here tonight knowing who the Navigators are and what it is that we're attempting to do. This picture here, I'm sorry that you in the balcony can't see it, it's a picture of Doss Trotman. Dawson Trotman is the founder of the Navigators, and he came to Christ when he was about 22 years old and immediately began to have a heart to help people and to be involved in building up people, leading other people to Christ, and so on. And Doss found a principle that is a principle that we apply even today after all these years in his life and in his ministry, and that was that it wasn't sufficient to work with people just in large groups, or for that matter, even small groups, but the real ministry took place on an eyeball-to-eyeball situation. And he even began to work with junior high schoolers, and they gave him a class just after he had become a Christian. They gave him a class of junior high boys, and I don't know whether you've ever taught Sunday school, but those of you that have taught junior high boys, you know how difficult that is. And he began to realize right off the bat that he wasn't going to get anywhere trying to deal with them as a group. So he picked the worst one in the class and later in the week went over to visit with that boy. And he began to have conversations with him, and he would begin to help him and get that one straightened out a little bit. And then he'd go and get in a conversation with another one. And he found that this really worked. And they began to grow spiritually. Later on, he began to do the same thing when he was asked to work with a sailor on board a ship. And really, we kind of trace our history as an organization to that particular focal point. He began to build up this young sailor and help him not only to be able to study the Bible and to have a meaningful devotional time and really get acquainted with God, but how to share his faith. How to win others to Christ. In fact, this sailor finally got one fellow that was all excited and interested, and he went to Doss. He said, Doss, I finally found a man. You told me to pray about one. I found a guy who really wants to grow in the Christian life. I want you to train him like you've trained me. And Doss said, no, I'm sorry. No, I won't do that. If you can't train him, then I haven't done my job. And that's a foundational principle of the Navigators. Today, our ministry is in over 30 countries of the world. We have over 1,400 on our staff. And basically, we are involved in a ministry to individuals and small groups. And it's a fantastic and an exciting thing to see what God is doing worldwide through the vision of one man, Doss Trotman. Maybe if I describe my own situation, that will help you to see how this works in reality. I was born and raised in Canada, and I'm probably one of those fortunate individuals that as a young boy, 10 years old, I had a dream. And my dream was to become a professional hockey player. And the fortunate part of that is that I was allowed to do that. I became a professional hockey player. I gave myself for 12 years from the age of 10 until I was 22 to nothing else but hockey. I mean, even in the summer, we, you know, around here, I see boys carrying their basketballs and baseballs and various things. And in Canada, where I grew up, it was a hockey stick, and then we'd use a tennis ball, and we'd play on the pavement or out on the road. And we did that year-round, you know, when the ice wasn't in. And for 12 years, I disciplined myself to become a professional hockey player. That was my sole ambition. I began to... My spiritual background was a complete void. For 22 years, as far as I know, I never heard a positive statement about Jesus Christ. The names were familiar and all of that in our family, but they were not used in a spiritual connotation. My home life was characterized by one of violence. We have a very expressive family, and the way that we settled any conflicts was to either, you know, shout the other person down, curse them down, or literally beat up on them. And this went all the way through the family. And I grew up in that atmosphere. Very, very violent, very hockey. I don't know whether you're familiar with the sport, but it's not exactly a sport for the faint-hearted. And in fact, if you watch hockey games, I'll tell you, and this will help you when you go up to watch the Rockies or some of these other teams play, there are really two kinds of hockey players. There are those that are technically proficient. I mean, they really know the skill, they pass well, they score goals, they set up the other players. And then there are a few players on every team that we used to call them butchers. I think they're called policemen now. It's a more acceptable term. But their job is intimidation. Now, I, you know, even when I was about 17 or 18 years old, I weighed about 190 pounds and was about the same size that I am today. And that was big in those days for a hockey player, although, like every one of the other sports, they are growing and bigger hockey players. But I was big. And my job, I was not good technically in the skill aspect. But I'll tell you, you wouldn't want to drop your sticks and gloves and go nose to nose with me in my younger days. That was my skill. And I became so proficient at that I was given a professional contract. I got involved in drinking when I was 14. I'm sure if alcohol had been, or if drugs had been on the scene, I would have been into that. By the time I was 21, I was a heavy drinker, well on my way to becoming an alcoholic and carrying that trait into the next generation of our family. I returned home. I signed a professional contract with the Detroit Red Wings, and they farmed me out to one of their teams, and I played a year in Milwaukee in what was known as the International Hockey League, and then I returned home to for the summer. I didn't know what I was going to do after that year. I was rather discouraged with hockey at that particular point, but I got into conflict with a policeman. In fact, he was much bigger than I was. And so I ended up in jail. And this was not the first time I had been in jail. In fact, it was the second time within a year and a half that I had been charged with a felony. It's one thing to have a misdemeanor, but it's another thing to have a felony charge against you, and particularly two, within a very short period of time. And as I sat in jail that night, I realized that I was really, I mean, I was in trouble. Real trouble. And it's interesting, as a young 21, 22-year-old person, how your thoughts always go back to your family when you're in trouble. And I thought, well, maybe I'll call Dad and have him come down and bail me out. And I thought about that. I didn't think very long. My dad retired last October. He worked 40-some-odd years with the same company. They've lived in the same home for 40-some-odd years. He's a blue-collar worker. He just worked darn hard all of his life. And I knew that if I had called him at that time, he would have told him to throw the key away, that he was fed up with my lifestyle, and just to keep me there, it might do me some good. But I had heard from my sister when I returned home that year, at the end of that hockey season, that my mother had told me that my sister and brother-in-law had become religious while I had been away playing hockey that year. In fact, she said it was far worse than that. They had become Baptists. Now, I had no idea, you know, the difference between a Baptist or a Unitarian or a Catholic or a Jew or a Protestant. I had no reference point, except somewhere in my background I realized that people with a spiritual experience are supposed to demonstrate that. They're supposed to visit widows and orphans and people in jail. So I thought, aha, I'll call my brother-in-law and we'll find out what this spiritual experience is all about and see whether he's really going to put shoe leather to this particular commitment. So I called him, and he came down, and he bailed me out. Now, he didn't know how to communicate to me what had happened to he and my sister, although it had been obvious because I used to hang around with them quite a little bit, and I knew there were some things that they were wrestling with, there were some changes taking place, and I could see it, but they couldn't communicate to me what it was because they didn't know how to articulate it. But he did the next best thing, and that was to invite me to go to the place where it happened. And we were driving home that night as he bailed me out of jail, and he said, "Now, Bob, I'd like you to come to church with me tomorrow morning." It happened to be Saturday night, and I said, "Well, Ray, boy, I really appreciate, you know, and I know you're concerned, and I feel obligated to you." I said, "But Sunday mornings is just not a good morning for me. I mean, I'm usually not feeling too well, or I'm still at the party, or whatever." And I said, "You know, my lifestyle is just not compatible with going to church on Sunday mornings. And I appreciate your offer." He said, "Oh, that's okay. No problem." He said, "This particular church has got that figured out. And for guys just like you, they have a Sunday evening service at 7 o'clock. Now, I didn't know the difference. I mean, I really didn't. I thought, boy, that's a good deal. They got a church service figured out for guys like me. I better go. I didn't know the difference. Now, those of you that are out of the Baptist, and by the way, I'm not taking pot shots at the Baptist because I'm ordained in the Baptist church and I appreciate the Baptist very much. But those of you that are out of the Baptist persuasion, you know that Sunday night in a Baptist church is no place for a guy who doesn't have a relationship with God. Because every Sunday night you're going to hear the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, I say it was no place. It was really the ideal spot, wasn't it, for me? And I went, and for 8 Sunday nights in a row, I heard for the first time in my life the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, and how Jesus could really change my life. And at the end of that 2 months, the end of that 8 weeks, the pastor gave an invitation for those who really wanted to put their faith and trust in Jesus Christ to come forward and to demonstrate publicly that commitment. And I had determined before he had finished the message that night that that's what I was going to do. That was in April of 1962, and I have never regretted that decision. It's been the most fantastic change in my entire life. Now, I'd like to read you a little statement. I mentioned to you this business of having some problems with the law. And being a Canadian, we met the navigators and began to get some basic help in how to study the Bible and so on as laymen up in Canada. And then after about 3 years, the navigators asked us to move to the United States, to Madison, Wisconsin, and get some training there in working with university students. And then we were to go back after a year to work with students in Canada. We thought that was a good deal, and we moved. And for 2 years, we were in this country on what is known as a visitor's visa. And that was fine and dandy, but then the navigators asked us to stay on indefinitely, which means that we had to immigrate. And we went through the whole process, and we went, you know, all that rigmarole that you have to go through with governments to get the proper status. And as we were going through that very difficult period of time, the U.S. consulate discovered that I had 2 felony charges against me, and they ruled that we couldn't come into the United States on a permanent basis and that we would have to return to Canada. Now, during that 2-year stay, we had had a little baby girl. In fact, she was about that long. I think she's up in the balcony. I won't embarrass her now. She's quite a bit bigger now. But we had had her in Champaign, Urbana, Champaign, Illinois. And she was born there. And as the U.S. consulate was going over our record, he said, "Oh, I see here that you are the parents of a U.S. citizen." I thought, "No, she's a Canadian." No, she's a U.S. citizen. "And as parents of a U.S. citizen, we'll allow you to come into the States on that basis because you are the parents of a U.S. citizen." Well, we thought that was a good deal and that God had really provided an unusual opportunity to stay in the States. But we also realized that someday we would like to go overseas, if God should lead, and be missionaries in another country. And that if we were to do that, we were going to have the same difficulty in any country we went. They were going to discover that I had a record, and we were going to go through the same hassle. So I decided that I would see whether the Canadian government, who is represented by the Queen, would grant us a pardon, would grant me a pardon. And we went through another very painful, all the paperwork and all the stuff that you have to go through to even get a hearing on that particular thing. And finally, we got a document. I got a document. It's at home on my dresser, but this is an excerpt from that document. And I'd like to read it to you because I think it really describes what Jesus Christ did for me the day I put my trust in Him. And this is kind of written in the old King James English, so you just bear with me for a minute, but I think you'll understand what I'm saying. This is the Queen's Pardon. It says, "Whereas, since we have been implored on the behalf of Robert James Sheffield to extend a pardon to him in respect to the conviction so recorded against him, the Honorable Solicitor General has submitted a report to us upon this case. Now therefore know ye, that having taken all these things into consideration, and for divers good reasons, we are willing to extend the royal clemency unto him, the said Robert James Sheffield." Now listen to this. "We have pardoned, remitted, and released him, the said Robert James Sheffield, of and from the said convictions, and from every penalty to which he was liable." Now, folks, that's what Jesus Christ does when we respond to the invitation to receive him into our lives. Now, the Navigators are highly committed to communicating this part of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the good news of Jesus Christ. And we realize that one of the ways that people can respond to this good news is to become familiar with it, to study it, to find out about it before you make an irrational commitment to it. We met Nancy and I met a couple about a year, over 2 years ago now. And we met them at a little deal, and we sat down to have breakfast with this couple, and I said, Stan, would you be interested in studying the Bible with us this fall? We're going to have a Bible study. We want some people who would study the Word with us. And I sense that you have some real spiritual needs. Would you be interested? He said, "Bob, I'm almost 40 years old." He said, "I've been a businessman for almost 20 years. I make decisions every day on the basis of facts and data." He said, "But I have to tell you that I have rejected God and Jesus Christ without ever examining the data." Now, we spent almost 50 hours in Bible study with that couple before Stan came to know Jesus Christ as his personal Savior. But it was worth it. He is growing. He is sharing his faith. We just talked to him this morning in Chicago. They're buried in snow back there. And what a thrill for people to be able to go to the Word of God and have your questions answered. Now, on your chair when you came in, you'll find a little card. And we would like you to take that card. If you're so interested, fill out your name and your address and check off the appropriate responses there. We believe that there are a number of you, and some of you were at our banquet in November down at the Broadmoor and indicated an interest to be in Bible studies. And we would like to ask you to indicate that interest on this card. Now, the format of these studies is such that we will try to get you into a study with other like people. Some of you, maybe this is totally foreign to you. You've never heard this kind of a presentation tonight, but you're interested. Well, then just indicate on the card, and we'll get you into a study group with one of our staff people who will really be able to help you answer some of those questions. Now, what we're looking for is a 6-week commitment. Some of the studies will be formulated and they'll work, they'll go every week for 6 weeks. Others will go every other week, but for 6 studies. And that'll just depend on the staff man and whether he's traveling or not, that particular couple. But if you're interested, or maybe you're a Christian, you've been a Christian for a long time or for a short time, but you've never really grown, you really don't know what the Bible has to say about spiritual growth and your involvement in the Christian life, well, indicate that on the card. And on your way out, we'll have some folks here at the door. And on your way out, or just give your card to anybody with a red tag. But we'll also have some fellows at the door to pick these up. We hope that this is communicated to you. It's just a very cursory overview of who the NAVs are. But as you get into the tour, some of your other questions about the organization itself and the castle will be answered. Bill?